Welcome to Faith in Each Other. I'll be your host, Jordan Howard, and on this show, I want to dive into the minds and the beliefs from people of all walks of life, baby boomers to millennials. No question is off limits as we learn together and go through the journey together of seeing where we, as a society, have gone wrong and where we have gotten it right. I believe that our faith in each other can lead us into a beautiful future. Each episode, I will be joined by Reverend David Williams, my pastor, and his good friend Tom Ingram, as we talk through challenges facing our society today and gain an understanding from different perspectives. Let's dive in.
The yellow jackets. I just could hear in people's conversation, just in conversation, their concerns about their country. In Europe, and I think we'll get to this in a minute, all over Europe, and just like here in our country, governments are really shaking. Spain just now has a new prime minister who's a woman, and she is very articulate about going back, locking the borders, going back to the older ways, taking care of our citizens, nobody else.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to our show, Faith in Each Other. I'm your host, Jordan. Of course, I'm joined here today with Thomas Ingram and his good friend, Reverend David Williams. Hello, guys. How are you?
Good.
Now, today on Faith in Each Other, we are going to be discussing a rather unique topic. Pastor Dave has recently visited France during a very political-driven time. We're going to see how our countries compare the politics of France, you know, take a different kind of framework. Real quick, before we dive in, how was your trip, Pastor Dave?
The trip was just wonderful. I just wish I had another word. I had been to France before, but I never got to investigate it like I did this time. So we saw a lot of views of France, and it was just a great time.
Yeah, I bet. I haven't been yet, but I hope to go someday. So, but anyway, like I was mentioning before, the politics of France, they take place with the framework of a semi-presidential system that's determined by the French Constitution of the French Fifth Republic. The nation declares itself to be an indivisible, secular, democratic, and social republic. Now, the United States is a constitutional federal republic in which the president, the head of the state, and the head of the government, Congress, and judiciaries share powers reserved to the national government, and the federal government share sovereignty with the state governments. Now, I want to open up the floor. It's kind of a question for both of you. How aware of foreign politics, and in particular, France's political structure, are you? And in your most simplistic way, can you describe how they are similar or different? I'll open the floor. Either one of you can respond.
I think right off the bat, the first thing that comes to my mind, what makes us similar, is we both have presidents. You know, we both of our countries have a representative person or the face of the government in the presidency. But France also has a prime minister, which we don't have, you know, and, you know, but it has two branches, just like we have the legislative, the executive or the president. And God, my history is going out the window. The third branch that checks, that keeps everybody in balance. And it's not quite like that in France's government.
Tom, did you have anything to add on to that? Do you know how they compare or differ?
Yeah, no, to me, the current political situation in France is very analogous to ours, where it's a deeply divided country. And it has all kinds of political divisions, and it has, you know, the same kind of racial diversity that we have. But to me, the division in France is the same as it is here. Sarkozy has, you know, been reelected, but or Macron.
Not Sarkozy.
Macron.
Macron.
Yeah. Macron has been reelected, but he's widely hated by a huge portion of the population. And they had their yellow vest protests. I don't know if you heard about that when you were there, but people would go out on the streets and shut down, and then they would wear this yellow safety vests. Mm. And those are high-vis vests. I have to wear those when I'm in the beverage plants. But to them, the high-vis vest is a symbol of blue-collar status. Right. Only blue collar people have to wear those vests. So that became like, you know, the African-American community in the United States, they take things that are bad and then try to transform them into something that they can assimilate and make into something good. Well, that's what the workers in France are doing. They're, you know, putting on the vest to protest, you know, exemplifying their lack of education because of the vest. So France is a deeply divided country, and to me, you know, their democracy is struggling, and it's very, very similar to ours. And it's, you know, I think it's similar to the problem they have in Kenya, and I think it's similar to the problem that they have in Iraq. I think that, you know, if you look at this, how people react to democracy, that it's almost independent of culture. It's almost independent of location. You end up with the same result, which is that, you know, people turn on each other because of what's said. But to me, the political situation you have in France is very analogous to ours. And it's kind of reassuring because it, you know, it's not just us, but other people have this problem too, you know. But I think if you look across history, you look across regions, whatever it is, you're going to see the same weaknesses of democracy no matter how you look. And it's just a very consistent story. And that's why it's frustrating to me that, you know, it's not part of our popular culture that everybody understands. So. But I see France as very much a reflection of our own country.
Okay. Well, thanks for that, Tom. Now, this question's for you, Pastor Dave. During your time in France, did you notice any of the political campaigns? And if any, how do they compare to ours here that we have in the United States?
You know, One of the things I think, Jordan, that I notice when you have other foreign governments, we have a two-party, you know, kind of system here in America. We have the Democrats. Well, really three, but, you know, the two majors are the Democrat, Republican, and then the Independents or the Green Party. But in other countries who have prime ministers, you have multiple parties. You have many, many, many parties. And the president normally rises, or the leadership rises through that party, from out of that party. And I know Macron is part of the Marche party, which means to walk or to march in French. And Tom makes a strong point that Macron's popularity is definitely shaky. It's on very shaky ground. I'm sure, just like anyone else, when he came into presidency back in 17, 18, I cannot quite remember his first term. Well, it's a 5-year term, probably 16. He had a 65% rating. And, you know, I think somewhere now he's probably around the high 40s. A rating, which is under 50%. I think it's what I saw, which was, I don't know. I went nowhere where I saw the yellow jackets. I just could hear in people's conversation, just in conversation, their concerns about their country. In Europe, and I think we'll get to this in a minute, all over Europe, and just like here in our country, governments are really shaking. Spain just now has a new prime minister who's a woman, and she is very, very articulate about going back, locking the borders, going back to the older ways, taking care of our citizens, nobody else. But when I was in France, I'm sorry.
Very Trump-like.
Yes, very Trump-like. She's a Lady Trump. I mean, probably shouldn't say that, but she would remind you of a Lady Trump. And right.
Italy, not Spain, but that's.
Oh, yes, right. Italy. It was Italy. Italy. Yeah. You would just think, oh, wow, I've heard these persuasions. In France, though, what I noticed when we had the opportunity to go attend a retirement dinner for a person I didn't know, but we went with friends and, you know, just kind of were just at a dinner party at a person's house. And you heard the conversations that you kind of heard were the cost of things, how expensive things are. People were concerned about a year or two ago, how it was different from now, when people were hoping that the government would have fared better for the everyday person. And so what I picked up on, it's the same voices that we hear now. There's a disappointment in the behavior of your government. There's a disappointment in the work of the government. There's a lot of rhetoric, but also there's a lot of disappointment. And so people are dissatisfied with the current government. And then you move into the different parties. You know, I think being there were about maybe 15, 20 people in this house that we were in. And you had, you know, there were some people who were socialists. There were some people who were more concerned about economy, you know, and when they would use a term liberal, it wasn't like how we use a term liberal here in America. You know, when we think of the liberal party, you kind of think of social issues. You know, how are social issues? Who do we take care of? There, it wasn't so much that. It was more of the economic condition. You know, that was screaming there, and you could hear it, you could see it. But France, being France, though. France, me and Debbie compared France, and Tom, you've been there. You maybe this is correct. France reminds me of New York, New York City. I mean, at least Paris. Paris reminds me of New York City. Everybody is there. So you see the extremely rich, And then you also see the street people, and you see them all together. You know, you just see that. The issues that I picked up on in France was the European Union. You know, people had to discuss, help me understand now the difference with Britain being out of the Union, how they couldn't go back and forth between Britain because they were no longer in the Union. And so everybody is trying to wrap their head around, how do we connect with each other? It wasn't adversarial. It was more of, there's a big change has happened. We used to all just get along and drive between each other's borders because we were a part of the same union, or you know, so part of the same contract. But now that's different. And so you would hear people saying, you know, it's a little harder. Or you would hear people just say, we don't even go to Britain anymore. We just choose not to go to Britain. We found other places to go that are just as close or even better. So it was that was very much clear there, that they were trying to wrap their heads around now that Britain is out of their union. The thing that I wanted to stress very, very clear was, you don't hear words about race out loud. You don't hear, you know, let's talk about how the Turks are living or how the African, you don't hear that. If anything, it's like they don't talk about it. And it's like, you know, we're trying to fight, even though there are issues. It's Yes, I went to the side of the African country. I mean, what people from Africa huddle and live, and they will have a different take on their conditions in Africa. I mean, their conditions in France. So, but you don't hear this conversation. They're, you know, we just didn't hear it. And I found that kind of odd, where people were very, very much about just taking care of themselves, just trying to make it happen, just trying to live. But there was a lot of dissatisfaction in the country. I just want to stop there. But those are some of the initial responses Debbie and I got, and how we saw their country and our country, their president, our prime minister. They didn't have a lot of good words for their president. You know, just like a lot of people here don't have a lot of good words for the role of president. So that was very similar. But if you read the papers, the parties, I don't know if they have 20 different parties or 15 different parties, but all of the parties constantly were making themselves known about the issues that that confronted them, which is quite different from us. There were more demonstrations. They do have demonstrations a lot versus us here. You know, they have demonstrations. So those were my quick initial awareness of being in France and, you know, being especially in Paris. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. France has seen a rising nationalist faction that has grown by appealing to the Catholic identity and anti-immigrant sentiment. The intentional division has caused a loss of faith in each other that parallels with what we're seeing here in the United States. Now, Tom, you've been to France too, correct?
I have, yeah, several times, but it was before the Macron election, before the Yellow Vest protests. I was probably there at least a decade ago.
A little bit
more, maybe 12 years. And I would imagine that it was a much more politically unified country 12 years ago than it is now. I think a lot of the problems, a lot of the internal division problems that are similar to ours have come up over that period.
Okay. So would you, up until recently, I'm not sure how recent, the government of France has alternated between the rather two stable coalitions. On the left, one led by the Socialist Party with the minor parties such as the Greens and the Radical Party of the left, and on the right, led by the Republicans of the Union of Democrats and Independents. So when you were there, were they more based on this coalition, or are they kind of what they are now?
Yeah, I would say that when I was there, they had the classic center right, center left type government. And so, you know, and then Macron, he ended up like starting his own party, really.
Right.
So they just pitched the whole existing parties and started over again. And then he was running against Le Pen, of course, whose father, I mean, she founded, her father founded a fascist party. I mean, it was based on the Nazi model. So, you know, this is my message to the American people is, you know, we go, yeah, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats are both corrupt and they've been around too long, maybe a third party. And, you know, you might miss them once they're gone. You know what I mean? Because they are kind of a moderating force, I think, still at this point. You know, if we had a third party in the United States, I'd hate to even think what they're advocating for. You know what I mean? So, but anyway, in France, the two mainstream parties going away and getting replaced by these other ones, I don't think it helped anything. Yeah. As far as operating the government. And I think their government is almost as paralyzed as ours. It very really struggles with working.
You know,
it's more organized so the president is independent. They organize it that way on the purpose because in the 30s, the government was so that the president didn't have any power and that was a problem. So they kind of overreacted to that. But I think that, you know, our problems that we have are very similar to theirs. And that what tells you is the problem with democracy is not us. We're okay. They have the same problem. They speak a different language, living on a different continent. You know, this is common, you know.
Right. Pastor Dave, you're going to ask Tom something.
Yeah, I was going to say, Macron, he started his party. It's something like National Marché. I cannot remember the first part of it, but, and that's just it. I think what's happening in countries are saying, I don't like what we have. Our people are saying, I don't like what we have. Let's create something different. The problem with when you say, let's create something different, it's normally never been tested. You know, it's just one idea and a person or a group is just saying, oh yeah, it's gotta be better than what we had. And so people run to that because they're saying, I don't like the left. I don't like the right. Let's just create something. And everybody normally jumps on the wagon on the next thing. But very, very soon you find out that the thing you jumped on, it really has no foundation. It has nothing even similar to bringing in a national coalition. And so I think by that time, what I was learning about France is by that time, others are trying to create a brand new something again. So you got another little party saying, we're going to, you know, benefit the country and we're going to make it better by, you know, equality or something, just taking a strategy. And what happens is a one-legged party of any kind normally doesn't stand very well. And so every time you pitch just a one idea, it normally sounds good in the opening. But when you say, can it serve the whole, is where it's tested and it normally begins to fall. And I think that's what I think about while I was there and I was thinking about America. Man, if you've never been out of this country, a lot of people don't have a clue how other countries run. They have not a clue. And so all they can say is, man, everybody here is being bought off. This group is just as they're just political politics. I would just say, go visit another country. Go visit another country with a different style of government. You jump on your plane and run back here and go, ooh, man. And so that's what when I was just trying to listen to people and learn is that when people are dissatisfied and hurting, and I will not diminish their hurts or their dissatisfaction, but you got to be careful when you just go, just get us any wooden horse. We just want a brand new wooden horse in here. You can get the wooden horse, but what comes out of the wooden horse, man, it could set you back for eons. And I think that's what I'm glad that I had this time to take a quick trip out of the country, find people who were similar to us, but also also bear witness to a government that's similar, but not like ours. But you got a lot of voices saying we have another new way. And so I think that weakens, and they may not like that, but I think that may weaken your country because you may have so many little pieces that are saying, if y'all jump with me, we'll make it better. And I just noticed that. And I just want to bring that out. Macron created his party. And right now there are other new parties who are trying to create a whole new party. That's going on right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Le Pen may have lost the presidency, but she propelled her ideas to the mainstream, therefore securing an incredible victory over the far right. Her exclusionary ideas may seem new, but they draw roots from the early days of French nationalism and fundamental tradition of secularism in France. Now, speaking of Macron being an independent, our 13th president, Millard Fillmore, was the last independent to be elected into presidency in 1850 to 1853. Is there any way an independent party in the United States will be elected president again? Tom?
Our system set up is a two-party system. And I'm not an expert on this stuff, but so ours is first past the post system. So whoever gets the most votes wins, whereas other systems force you to get 50%.
Right.
The way our system is structured, if you're a minority party, you're not going to have any power at all. So, I mean, just that parliamentary system is a multi-party system. But to me, it's the structure of the government obviously matters. I mean, we can prove that. But what really matters is what is in people's hearts. And if they really believe in each other, then the system will work. And if they don't, it won't. And And I think what you have in France is a system where the people have lost faith in each other, very similar to the United States. And the working class people just don't trust the educated class to do the right thing for them. They think they have contempt for the working people. And with that kind of environment, I don't care what kind of structure you have. If you have a democracy, it's going to be hard to get anything done. And I think their government is about as paralyzed as ours is right now. And, you know, it's kind of enlightening what Dave was saying about the sense of, you know, unease about the political situation. Very similar to what we have here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jordan, can I just add, you know, when we are suspect of our government, I heard Barack Obama, I just saw a video of him just recently since I got back, and I can't remember at what university he was speaking at, but he said something that really, you know, kind of grabbed my attention. He says, what has happened in our countries, our major countries, that's making our democracies so weak is the people of some of our leading countries are now, I want to say this correctly. He says they have lost faith in the media. They've lost faith in the government system, that just the structures that we have. And of course, they don't believe in each other, you know. So if you, you know, as when we were growing up, Walter Cronkite, I always like to go back to old Walter.
Exactly.
When Walter would give the news, you know, we would go, Walter would say, and, you know, this is happening in Vietnam and Ho Chi Minh Trail has been shut down and we're moving people back by 1,000. And we used to all go to bed. And if you repeated that, you would only repeat what Walter said. You didn't doubt Walter. Walter Cronkite was your uncle or your granddaddy. And so, you know, you took an old Morrow. I can't remember Morrow, the other journalist, when they reported or when they wrote, it wasn't lopsided. It was, here's the news. I'm reporting the news. And so you had a trust factor in media was being non-biased. It was reporting what it actually saw. Well, the media, I think this is what Barack was saying. The media now is not trusted. I don't care whose media it is. You can be your mainline, ABC, NBC. You don't trust them. You don't trust Fox. You don't trust any of your media systems. And so now all of the news that's coming in and this is what Barack said that I sat up on. He says everything now is so chaotic that there is no camaraderie anywhere, but everything is in a total chaotic state. And if things are in a chaotic state, those who wanted to take advantage of a government system, this is a Garden of Eden. This is a perfect setting. And so if anything, you help flood the market with bad material or the ways with bad information so you can keep things in chaos. But as things are in chaos, you swoop in from whatever direction you want and you grab what, you know, you grab the attention that will get you or the things that you want further down the road, even though if you know it's going to be destructive to your country. And so Barack was saying that this is what's happening in some of our stable governments, that there is so much bad information, so much people are just sowing distrust. I mean, it is you want things to be broken and chaotic because I can put forth my platform because you are so confused. And so I think that's what's happening in America. I think that's what's happening in Europe. And I would definitely say in other major companies, I think there that are the mistrust is not all just happened to happen. I think it was planned to happen. Let's create a time of mistrust. And so it's part of what's bringing us to where we don't have faith in each other, because there's so much that you're hearing, you don't know what to do with it. And there are voices who are quietly saying, I can fix it. Just trust me. You go to bed. I'm going to fix this. I'm going to return back to the old ways. I'm going to build whatever, whatever. And this is because that same voice is the voice that also said, flood the market with trash, flood the world with trash, flood the country with trash. So people don't even have a clue of where they are. And I think that's where we are now. People don't even have a clue of why democracy is in trouble, because we're not even talking about democracy. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, you know, do you want to put people on an airplane and send them up to, you know, Mar-a-Lago or whatever? We're just keeping stuff convoluted. And that mm-hmm. to me was, I saw that. Now I understand why America is not the only entity that's hurting.
Hmm. Okay. Now, Tom, did you have anything you wanted to add on to that? I had a little.
This is one of my big subjects is, so in democracy, right, that citizens can't know everything. So if there's a crisis in Uzbekistan, then what we do is we find the Uzbekistan expert. There's got to be one of them out there, right? And then we run that him or her up there, and they tell us about Uzbekistan, and then we make a decision, right? That's the way the system's supposed to work. And in a lot of ways, the only thing that's wrong with our democracy, you can just state it like this, is that the working people have lost faith in our experts. Some of our experts are Walter Cronkite. Some of our experts are Dr. Fauci. But the working class people have lost faith in the experts. So if you don't have that, you don't have anything, because the people don't know enough about the subject. They have to be able to trust the experts. It's how the system works. You have to have trust in the experts. And the thing that I would really emphasize to our people today that I don't think, you know, Dr. Fauci or a lot of them people get, because I'm an expert. I'm the number one expert on empty bottle handling, high speed, you know. But I think what the most important thing for me when I'm being my expertise on my subject is I want the people to know that I'm not biased. I don't have a dog in the fight, right? I do, because I'm selling them stuff. But when I've been doing the expertise stuff, I try to stay away from it. Try to stay away from the business part and just stay with the engineering part so you can have credibility. But what I'm saying is that without average people believing our experts, we have nothing. Our democracy cannot function. And the other message I would say is that it's the responsibility of the expert to convince the lay people that they don't have a bias. And I think that's where we're failing.
Tom, something came to my mind. Okay, when you said that, you know, well, we've lost the confidence in our experts. A biblical analogy came to my mind. It is Jesus at times would speak out and says, we must be careful of wolves who come in sheep's clothing.
Right.
And he used that analogy is that when they come, they will come with a gentleness, and they will come trying to give you what you want to hear, trying to say what you want to hear. But at any given moment, they're going to shed themselves of the lamb's wool and show they're who they are as wolves. And I say that because that's what happens when I sow disunity so much into any group. I'm only sowing that not because I believe it. I'm waiting on my opportune moment to take control. Right. And I think what we are seeing now are quote wolves who are pandering to all sorts of sheep, but it's to their advantage. It's not how do we sustain our country? How do we sustain one another? It's almost like this greed, this power mongering has become so primary or primal in us that we don't care about one another. I just want to have it all. And when you do that, it brings down I think the foundation of any city, you know, it says, you know, a house against itself cannot stand. Mm-hmm. And I just see that our houses in each country, it's this internal thing is so strong that I think the wolves are creating such a chaos that nobody knows what's going on other than the wolf knows at a given point, I'm going to have it all. And it's going to be under, at least that's the goal, to have it all. Mm-hmm. And I think that's that spiritual force that we're fighting with day in. But you see it now around the world. This isn't just an American thing. This is around the world.
All right. Now, I wanted to mention before about our third party candidates or independents. Now, both parties in the United States find it in their best interest to not allow a viable third option. They made it nearly impossible for a third party candidate to compete for donations on a level playing field. Right after the 2014 midterms, the leaders of the Democratic and the Republican parties in Congress met in secret and changed the law so that an individual donors giving to the two major party candidates could donate $834,000 per year in total contributions through their parties, while those giving to independents were limited to just $2,700. Now, I think that's pretty interesting. That's some information I didn't even know, and it kind of makes sense why independent is never an option and why we're dealing with, you know, the two parties we have. Now, speaking of the political presidential terms, they do 5 years in France. We do 4 years here. Do you think there's a benefit to having an extra year in presidency or no? Is that kind of just irrelevant?
To me, I think their system is a lot better. I really think it is, where you have 1 5-year term. I guess they can get reelected, but in Mexico, it's 1 5-year term. Mm-hmm. You're president for 5 years, so they put you in there. And I think a big part of the problem with a lot of what we have, and we're facing that right now, I think, is that the presidents are more interested in getting reelected than actually running the government.
Right.
So your whole first term, you know, is spent just trying to win the second term, and then you try to get something done real quick in the second term. But to me, a 5-year, one single 5-6-year term, that's the way I would do it. And then get somebody in there that's really independent, is not looking for a political career, but is really trying to help the country more. But I think that reelecting and the 4-year thing is, but I don't think it, you know, I don't think that changing it is a good idea, because we're not in a position to change anything. We're too divided. We're paralyzed. So, you know, changing things that aren't really going to help. No, we need to focus on the stuff that's really going to matter and trying to restore the relationship so we can work together. But to me, I would prefer a single longer term. I just think it's a better arrangement.
That makes sense.
You know, I'm sorry, Jordan. Am I okay?
Yeah, you're good. Yeah.
Okay. No, I was in agreement sort of with Tom. I do believe our terms there, we need to really look back at our term limits. You know, we have justices that will be there forever, you know, until you drop dead. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sure. Me personally, that doesn't fly well with me. You know, I just go, mm-hmm. I think you need to have a time to contribute your intelligence, your giftedness, your directions, and but be ready for the next season. I think we need to have that freshness constantly coming in. I dare not say I know what the framers were thinking when they created, you know, these, you know, let's have two terms by a president. I agree with Tom. By time, you know, your first term, you're trying to kiss every baby, you know, you're going to General Motors, shaking hands, you know, you're christening boats and stuff, and, you know, doing all the things to show you are worthy for the next election versus, you are aware that my time is determined. And so how am I going to use that time? And when you have, you know, when we now have senators who've been in government for the last 40 years and 45 years and 50 years, you know, because they just keep coming back and saying, hey, you just need me every 3-4 years. You need me. I think that's part of people looking at a dissatisfaction of a government the way that it is. And I'm not so sure if we can create a new friendship and then change some laws or change how we our constitution writes, or should we change the constitution so we can change this behavior and hope that it will afford a better relationship. I'm just not sure which direction to go, but that term limit thing to me is most important. I think that's a high one for me in our government system right now.
Absolutely. I would agree. Now, as we draw near to the end of our episode here, is there any final thoughts you'd like to share with us, Pastor Dave, about your trip, or maybe you, Tom, about the topic at hand?
I would throw one more thing out. I got to go to Normandy. And the reason I drove over to Normandy, because that was where the great campaign battle was between the countries in World War II. But what made Normandy so important to me was Normandy, the World War II in France. My father and Debbie's father were both in France and Germany at that time fighting. And they were 20-year-old boys, you know, who were fighting for a country that would not afford them certain liberties. But they fought in one of the greatest wars that we have. And while I was at Normandy and I went through the museum, they had a small section on Black Americans who had fought and died there at Normandy. And it was so moving to me that my father, I mean, I was able to be there because my father got to make it home. He got home where there were 20,000 plus soldiers who didn't make it, you know, who didn't make it. But I think, you know, being there in France and going to Normandy, knowing that my father had been one of the army fighters there, was every time living here in America, every time I saw pictures of Normandy, I only saw white men. I only saw white battalions. But there were a great many men of color, Native Americans, Africans, African Americans who fought and died there, Jewish Americans who fought and died there. And it's one more time that, you know, I'm going, you know, I'm American. I'm a Black American, but we have fought for the democracy of our country just like everyone else. But at times,
in every war.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I just go, we fought for that liberty that we all declare, where our forefathers fought for that liberty. And that was a moving moment for me. But I would tell anybody, if you can go to Normandy, oh, you can't walk on that soil and not feel something. It was just amazing. So it was a rich moment for me going to Normandy.
Good. Glad you got to experience that. Tom, did you have anything else you wanted to mention before we wrap up today?
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, the force for unity in the United States should be the church. And, you know, I think that, you know, I'd call on the church to do that. But I think that really relates to France, too, because one of the things, you know, because you said like the government is secular, right? And they're very down on the Catholic Church out there. But I think that was kind of a mistake. I think that if they could have, you know, and it's not as though the Catholic Church hasn't done bad things in the past or anything like that. I'm not saying, you know, or tried to control the government or any of that. But I'm just saying that they were all Catholics. That was one thing they had in common. So pitching that aside, I don't know if that really would have. That was really helpful.
Yeah.
To my way of thinking, it's kind of part of the problem that they have now. If they could at least have that unity from being all, you know, a common faith, then I think that would have helped them a lot. But they decided not to use
it. And that's very clear, Tom. That's very clear that the church is ineffective there. It's very clear. It's black and white clear.
Yeah, and it's probably because of the church too, stuff they did. But
oh yeah, but you know,
but we still need your leadership. We need your religious leadership to get us out of this situation.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we cannot stay blind to the fact that the division we are seeing in the United States is not isolated. The intentional division driven by fear is something that is occurring worldwide. The loss of faith in each other is an issue that is steamrolling ahead in societies across the globe. If we do not open our eyes and work to regain faith in each other, we are handing our children, grandchildren, and generations to come a crumbling future. We have to do better, if not for us, for our children. Let's think about what we can do this coming week to help rebuild faith in each other. The time is now. And I want to thank you guys because I got to get going. But I appreciate you guys so much for doing this, getting this message out. And I've learned a great deal from you too, going through this podcast series with you guys. And of course, I want to thank all our viewers.
Appreciate you, Simon. Thank you for saying that.
Of course. Absolutely. And thank you to all our viewers.
Good to see both of you.
Glad you made it safe. Glad you guys are having a good week. So we will see you guys next time on Faith in Each Other. Thanks. Thank you so much for listening to Faith in Each Other. I hope today's conversation encourages you in your journey to have hard conversations and, most importantly, to listen to others around you. If we are going to have faith in each other, I believe we need to be willing to have hard conversations, and that is what we aim to do on this show. We will see you next time on Faith in Each Other. If you enjoyed this show, please share it with someone you know. See you next time.